This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Kim Landers. On the program today, cooler weather gives firefighters a slight reprieve as communities count the cost of another catastrophic weekend in Victoria and New South Wales.
You can't fathom what it's like, actually. It's just amazing. We watched it the other night when the fires took up through Wingelow and Bundaroon and up to Morila, and it was so scary. We were really worried.
And fury in the Middle East as Iran threatens retaliation after the US assassination of one of its top military chiefs. Hundreds of homes are feared destroyed across New South Wales and Victoria after a catastrophic weekend in the bushfire crisis. With people homeless and in desperate need of help, the Prime Minister is today launching a national bushfire recovery agency. In both states, fire crews are taking advantage of milder weather to secure containment lines before conditions deteriorate again on Friday. Our reporter Gavin Coote caught up with a group of firefighters near Nowra. They've been working on the vast Currawong blaze, which has threatened much of the New South Wales south coast.
Four fire trucks have snaked their way through charred bushland, smouldering trees falling without warning. This group of firefighters is doing some backburning northwest of Nowra, where the Currawong blaze continues to threaten homes on the city's outskirts.
If the burn's successful, these guys don't have to worry about amber attacks, spot overs. We're getting the spot overs 10 to 12 k's in front of the main fire front. So if we can avoid that, our job's done.
Les Prince has travelled from Queensland's Lockyer Valley to help fight the blaze, which is now 300,000 hectares in size.
Our fire's a lot different to it down here. Down here you've got a lot more gum trees and paperbark. Where I'm from, it's more grassland.
The fire has already destroyed hundreds of homes along the south coast in the last week. And on Saturday night, concerns it would jump the Shoalhaven River came to fruition. It was fanned by strong southerly winds, reaching 85 kilometres per hour. Temperatures went from 43 degrees suddenly down to 28 degrees and right back up again, throwing embers across the dry bushland in multiple directions. Julie Mehick and her three sons were watching on as the wind gusts came through, putting the farm south of Nowra under threat of ember attack. She'd been waiting for this all day and felt prepared, but every bit as nervous.
And I just feel for all the people in just everywhere down here that are probably in worse places than us.
The Rural Fire Service has building assessment teams now surveying the full extent of the damage. Property losses to Nowra's west and in the Kangaroo Valley have been confirmed. Sarah Helliger's rural property came under major ember attack.
Oh, it's all really scary, really smoky, lots of trees just falling down.
How's your house?
It's still standing, so we've lost some sheds and some machinery and some fences, but everything else is all right.
Firefighter Les Prince has similar hopes. Crews are now taking advantage of cooler conditions to slow down the spread of the Currawong fire. But the arrival of light rainfall has now become a setback for backburning efforts.
We've got this misty, high humidity, which is making the job a little bit difficult because it's not burning like they like to.
So no conditions are really perfect for this then?
Not really, no.
Fellow Queensland firefighter Steve Giles is used to battling blazes in coastal heath. He worries just how dry the south coast landscape has become.
It burns differently. And the trees, it's the gums, they're full of eucalyptus oil and then there's no moisture in them. They just explode.
Firefighter Steve Giles ending that report from Gavin Coote. Properties have been lost in the New South Wales Southern Highlands and Kangaroo Valley. Isabel Rowe reports from the town of Mossvale.
Huddled in a shed at the local showgrounds, Patricia Bover has her phone in one hand and a glass of champagne in the other.
This is anaesthetic.
But this isn't a celebration. Patricia is waiting to hear about her home, which is in the path of a fire burning through the New South Wales Southern Highlands.
The fires are behind the property, and I think they're there now. The fire engines are there now trying to protect it.
It's the second fire threat Patricia Bover has dealt with this week. She's evacuated again with about 90 alpacas from her property at Penrose, near the Hume Highway in the Southern Highlands.
We brought them here on New Year's Eve when the first fire front came through, and then we brought the last lot about 2 days ago. So we evacuated what we could and went back for the rest.
Almost 800 people evacuated from towns around the Southern Highlands on Saturday night after the Moreton fire flared up, threatening homes. Some are at the official evacuation centre at Mittagong, about half an hour's drive north. Neil Parker is the president of the showgrounds.
So they were sort of not just evacuating one area, they were nearly evacuating the whole Highlands. Been great, like our local produce, Knoll Stock Feeds. You know, they've been bringing feed for horses for the people that can't get back home and get their feed. Barrow Pet Shop have been bringing, you know, ice blocks and that for the smaller animals.
I sense from a few people I've spoken to, they're getting pretty tired, pretty stressed about it.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. You know, like you get people here that sort of said they, you know, they don't feel like driving anywhere for dinner and lunch and all that, so they've appreciated us putting on a, you know, a sausage sizzle for them. And
also among the campers is Renee Eccleston and her family, who live in Exeter, the neighbouring town at the edge of the Moreton fire.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You can't fathom what it's like, actually.
But with the danger past for now, at her home, there's a chance of a better night's sleep.
I've got my swag, a couple of comfortable pillows. Yeah, we've got feed for the horses and I've got an esky, which has got about, well, the boys have just taken it, but it had about half a carton of beer in it. So you don't need much more than that.
After Saturday's extreme conditions and 40-degree heat, the weather has changed dramatically in the Southern Highlands. Last night, showground evacuees were in puffer jackets and under blankets as the mercury dropped to 12 degrees. And it rained. Not enough to put the fires out, but a reprieve for local rural fire service volunteers. Drink in hand and friends gathered around her in the showground's shed, Patricia Bover will have to wait a bit longer to find out if her house is still standing.
There is nothing we can do. There is nothing we can do. So we are here and we're very lucky.
That's evacuee Patricia Bover ending Isabel Rowe's report. And the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner, Shane Fitzsimmons, spoke a short time ago.
Still got more than 130 fires burning across the state and 54 of those are not contained. The good news is all fires are now back at the advice alert level, reflective of the conditions, particularly the more benign weather conditions, which then has a benefit on fire behaviour. So the fire behaviour is a lot less given these current conditions.
That's the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner, Shane Fitzsimmons. While in Victoria, the Premier is warning the clean-up bill for the bushfire devastation in the East Gippsland and Alpine regions will reach hundreds of millions of dollars. More than 100 homes have been destroyed, but authorities say it could be some time before the full extent of the damage becomes clear. Tim Skelton reports.
The dozens of fires burning in Victoria's East Gippsland and Alpine regions flared in high temperatures and strong winds. Hundreds of people were evacuated from Corryong in the state's north, including Lynn Bennett's.
There was just a big circle of burnt all around Corryong, stretched for miles. Dead animals, they got caught in fences, they couldn't get out. Owners left without opening gates. It was a bit, really pretty sad. Yeah, it was pretty horrific.
The town of Omeo in East Gippsland came under threat, but a sudden wind change saved it from the full force of the fire front, allowing residents to be airlifted to safety. East Gippsland Incident Controller Andy Gillam says good preparation across the region meant authorities' worst fears weren't realised.
We didn't suffer the asset loss that we were expecting, so in one sense, having the communities prepared for that bad weather and having the communities who self-evacuated, that message was strong enough that those people got out of the way of those dangerous fires.
More than 1,000 people were evacuated by sea from bushfire-ravaged Mallacoota. Clearing conditions on Sunday meant many more were airlifted from the town, and HMAS Adelaide is on standby for more sea evacuations. The Premier Daniel Andrews has announced that the government will contribute $2 million to a fund that's been set up to provide relief for bushfire-affected communities.
I don't want to appear harsh in any way, but we don't need any more clothes, we don't need any more food, we don't need any more trucks on our roads, we don't have the warehouse capacity, the people or the time.
He says the fund will be overseen by former Deputy Premier Pat McNamara, who chaired the fund set up in the wake of the Black Saturday fires.
What those families need most and what the agencies have asked me to convey to the Victorian community, cash to the fund is the best way that you can contribute to support those who are doing it really tough.
A cool change swept through the state on Sunday, bringing cooler temperatures and a slight reprieve for those fighting to defend their communities. But Victoria's Emergency Services Minister Lisa Neville says the reprieve is temporary.
There are two ways these fires go out. One is they burn themselves out, just keep burning and burning through the bush and into New South Wales. Secondly, if we were to receive about 200 millimetres of rainfall in a very short period, over a few day period, that would have a significant impact. That is not on the horizon.
Another spike in fire conditions is expected later this week.
Tim Skelton reporting. And our reporter David Sparks is in Sarsfield in East Gippsland. David, what can you see there?
Well, I can see an area of forest, Kim, that's been absolutely blackened by the fires that have swept through here in the last week. This part of Sarsfield lost several homes. I've seen them. They're absolutely disintegrated, the ones that have been hit by the fire. It also underlines the random nature of the fire because some houses have been left really unscathed. I spoke a little earlier, a few kilometres up the road, with the owner of the general store in Bruthen, James Nicholas. He's also the captain of the local fire brigade here, and he told me a little bit about how the town is holding up at the moment.
The fire's been indiscriminate. You know, there are houses that are burnt down and then there's one in the middle that's still standing. That's the nature of the beast.
How's morale around the community?
It's good. People think that we've been very lucky, like in the township of Bruthen, because didn't actually get finally into Bruthen, they got on the outskirts of Bruthen.
They wouldn't feel so lucky out in Sarsfield.
Yeah, I think Sarsfield probably feel as if they've been, you know, hit in the head with a cricket bat. They're feeling shell-shocked. We've got people that I know that have lost houses. They're just starting to collect themselves together and find out, you know, what they've got to do, who they've got to speak to, the processes that they've now got to go through for probably the next 6 to 12 months to, if they choose to rebuild.
David, for people in this area, when are they going to be allowed to go home?
Well, that depends where their home is. Here in Sarsfield, they can return now, but for people in places like Omeo, which is further to the north, authorities at the roadblocks are now letting emergency services and residents in. You have to show your ID to prove that you're a resident. Other areas further east, like further east from Orbost and further northeast, it's still not clear when people will be able to get back to their homes. The roads are still too dangerous, trees down. And a situation with a lack of clarity. The authorities are still trying to figure out what needs to be done to open up access so that those people can go home.
Now, a little further away in East Gippsland is Bairnsdale. It's the headquarters for a big evacuation centre. Are people still pouring into that area?
Well, they're not pouring into the area anymore. In fact, some of them have started to leave, but there are still a lot of people staying at the Bairnsdale Relief Centre. The other thing that you really notice, Kim, is the abundance of lots of different authorities, including Australian Defence Force personnel. You see a lot of the uniforms around. In fact, I saw a defence truck towing a wood chipper, which is obviously what you'd expect to see behind an arborist. That indicates what the army is spending a lot of its time doing here is trying to clear trees off the roads to open roads back up.
David Sparks reporting. Well, the thousands of Defence Force reservists will soon be arriving in more of the bushfire-ravaged towns to help recovery efforts. It's the first time such a call-out has been issued, and our political reporter Stephanie Boris joins me now. Steph, what are these ADF reservists going to be doing and where will they be based?
Kim, there will be a total of 3,000 reservists and they'll be assisting with the bushfire relief and recovery. So in terms of the skills that they have, everything from engineers to medics to vets, of course, we've seen lots of livestock and wildlife being affected by these fires too. Now, some of the reservists have already been sent out, the ADF describing it as a trickle feed method. Essentially, they're working through what skills are needed and where. So we'll see reservists placed across parts of New South Wales and Victoria. Some are also expected to be sent to Kangaroo Island in South Australia. Now, this was announced by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison over the weekend. It's a compulsory call out, meaning employers must let their reservists go.
Now, firefighters from the US and Canada have already been helping the Australian firefighters. Are more countries now sending assistance?
There are. New Zealand is providing 3 aircraft plus Defence Force personnel, specifically engineers and also firefighters. Singapore has offered 2 aircraft and the ADF is working through the logistics of that. So too is the ADF working with PNG because it's offered the help of soldiers and firefighters.
Steph, senior ministers are meeting once once more in Canberra today. Are we expecting more announcements from the government about its long-term response to this crisis?
Yes, we are, because the National Security Committee of Cabinet is holding its second meeting in as many days to discuss its response to the fires. And after that, Prime Minister Scott Morrison is set to unveil more details about the National Bushfire Recovery Agency, including the amount of funding that will be set aside for this agency. So the agency will coordinate the recovery effort from a federal level for the next 2 years. It will be led by former Federal Police Commissioner Andrew Colvin. We also have insurance company heads being called to Canberra to talk through the logistics for the months, if not years ahead on that part when it comes to destroyed and damaged properties. And the recovery effort, of course, Kim, also includes what to do about dead livestock. We've seen graphic footage coming out of Victoria and also Batlow in southern New South Wales of sheep literally littering the sides of roads and paddocks. The Natural Disaster and Emergency Management Minister David Littleproud says discussions are underway about how to handle that situation.
We're watching the unfolding story about the livestock, and in fact we'll be trying to take some preemptive steps today with state agencies around making sure the disposal of those livestock's done quickly. There's a biosecurity risk there. And we've also got to think about our native species that have been decimated by these fires too in terms of our recovery.
Now, Stephanie, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been criticised for his handling of the bushfire crisis. Is there any indication that all of this additional assistance, the frequent meetings that he's holding, is helping to turn that perception around?
Well, I think the government's very much aware of those complaints that they've been sluggish, and federal responses are now almost coming daily. The latest, as we've mentioned, that National Bushfire Recovery Agency, another press conference will be held later today, and Scott Morrison is still keeping the door open for a potential royal commission.
And that's our political reporter, Stephanie Morris, in Canberra. And a quick update, the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Authority says two people are now unaccounted for after this weekend's fires. To South Australia now, where a bushfire is still burning out of control on Kangaroo Island after blackening around a third of the island. Two people are dead, and authorities say there's been extensive damage to homes as well as water, power and other infrastructure. Rhett Burney reports.
Bushfires have been burning in dense scrub on the eastern side of Kangaroo Island for 2 weeks.
The fire went 50 kilometres an hour and a half and caught us out.
That's David Harris. He was helping his friends at a sheep station when embers started raining down around them. Moments later, their house was on fire. As the fire closed in, they sheltered by a garage wall. Then, with just seconds to spare, a ute appeared through the flames. The driver, one of his mate's workers, bundled the pair in and raced to a nearby bear paddock. Earlier in the day, authorities had evacuated some parts of the island because of the threat posed by the forecast severe weather.
When that evacuation happened, we thought that was a bit early. You know, we didn't think the fire would be there the next day, but they've obviously seen this happen before. I broke every rule in the book and nearly paid for it with a life.
Sadly, others did lose their lives. Well-known SA pilot, 78-year-old Dick Lang, credited with pioneering outback travel, and his 43-year-old surgeon son Clayton, died in their car while trying to flee. In a cruel twist, they'd been battling that very blaze earlier alongside other volunteer firefighters. Elsewhere, a phone call from a friend almost certainly saved the lives of John Stanton and his wife Carol.
I was born over here 71 years ago, and there's never been a fire like this on Kangaroo Island from the south ever before. It was just ferocious.
The pair have lost their house as well as their native plant nursery business.
Hundreds of embers just flying through the air. We decided we weren't going to defend.
Kangaroo Island, or KI as South Australians call it, is home to 4,000 people, but summer holidays see that number double. Just like many fire-ravaged parts of the nation, KI's economy is largely built on tourism. 120,000 people visit the famous Flinders Chase National Park each year. On Friday night, it too was decimated. Endangered species, some so rare they are unique to the island, could be a lot harder to replenish. South Australia's Environment Minister is David Spears.
It can bounce back, but we need to be identifying those populations, those species which have been particularly impacted.
Livestock losses are huge. It's estimated at least 100,000 sheep have perished. Thousands more had to be put down.
Well, thousands of cattle, sheep and horses have also perished in the Victorian and New South Wales bushfires, adding to the woes of farmers who've already been hit hard by the drought. Dairy farmers are warning fresh milk and cheese supplies could be hit, with road closures limiting access to fodder and fuel. Victoria Pengilly filed this report.
It took 10 minutes for a ferocious blaze to destroy half of dairy farmer Robert Miller's farmland on the New South Wales south coast on New Year's Day. He's just one of hundreds of farmers across the country who've lost precious livestock supplies in recent bushfires.
Every dairy farmer in New South Wales is absolutely suffering now. We've got a shortage of milk. It's only going to get worse. If we are struggling, the whole of our rural economy is going to be really greatly affected.
While many farmers are still yet to assess the extent of damage, Robert Miller says urgent federal action is needed to support the industry, already reeling from the ongoing drought and persistently low milk prices.
The farmers have got no cash reserves. We've got no resilience. We've had a milk price that's been so low for so long. My problem to date has I was ineligible for drought funding because the federal government was using a desertification map rather than a drought map to classify people who could get funding. We're not desert anymore. We're a lunar landscape here.
Supermarkets like Coles and Woolworths say the fire crisis hasn't impacted their supply of fresh milk to date. But Max Roberts, president of Bega Cheese on the New South Wales south coast, says that could change, as many farmers are still unable to collect milk due to power outages.
When the fires went through, we lost power to a number of dairies, and that meant that cows weren't able to be milked for up to 60 hours. And that's not a good outcome for fresh cows, and there's certainly going to be a loss of production there.
He says any sort of government assistance needs to address not only the loss of cattle, but damage to property.
We've got to look at more than just feeding the animals. It is about getting the actual farm operation going again. And I think there's certainly a role around that infrastructure for government to be very, very heavily involved in and not leaving it all up to local government.
In East Gippsland in Victoria, there are already reports of pasture damage and stock loss. Paul Mumford is president of United Dairy Farmers of Victoria.
Milk production for this season will not recover. That it's all about animal welfare and making sure the animals are fit and healthy. So the milk production will be hurt somewhat.
Nowra-based farmer and recently appointed New South Wales dairy advocate Ian Zanstra says there's a risk production costs and worsening drought conditions could force some farmers out of the industry entirely.
Farmers leaving one a week in New South Wales over the last year. Without a doubt, these fires in the Bega and the southern area will have an impact upon those farmers, but also that regional dairying economy.
New South Wales dairy advocate Ian Zanstra ending that report by Victoria Pengilly. And a spokesperson for the Federal Agriculture Minister, Bridget McKenzie, says there are emergency payments available in the affected areas. Well, the bushfire devastation has sparked a massive worldwide fundraising effort. Tens of millions of dollars have been raised thanks to some high-profile celebrity help. The biggest push has come from the Australian comedian Celeste Barber, who's helped raise more than $30 million in just a few days. Julia Holman reports.
The unprecedented bushfire disaster has moved some into action.
Remember that time that you guys raised $16.5 million in a day and a half? I do. Unbelievable. I'm bumping it up. I'm going to bump it up to $20 million.
Since Friday, Australian comedian Celeste Barber has encouraged her millions of followers on social media to contribute.
Let's keep pushing, you know, because $20 million isn't enough.
Among those who have donated following her pleas for help include international stars Ellen DeGeneres, Natalie Portman and singers Pink and Lizzo. More than 750,000 people have donated via her Facebook page, smashing the original target of $30,000 to reach more than $30 million and climbing.
We've also been in contact with the head of the RFS, I don't know, the king of the RFS, the queen of the RFS, and about the money, and they are so overwhelmed. You guys, you know, a bit of positivity in the terror.
Like many Australians, Celeste Barber has a personal connection to the fires. Her husband's family was forced to leave their home in the New South Wales town of Eden near the Victorian border.
This is our war. This fire is Australia's war.
Her mother-in-law, Joy Robin, expressed her fear and frustration to news crews from the wharf at Eden after she fled her home.
It's been right down the Great Dividing Range. And now it's going right to the coast.
Sports stars are also adding to the donation tally. Tennis star Ash Barty says she'll give all her winnings from the Brisbane International to bushfire victims.
Obviously, there have been some really great initiatives from, you know, cricketers, tennis players, golfers, soccer players all over the country, people trying to help out. And I think now I've been able to give a little bit to the wildlife and to the people as well has been really, really special.
And those in the business world are contributing too. Businessman Jerry Harvey says he could understand what victims are going through because he's been through a similar loss himself.
When I was a 12-year-old, it was 1951, and the fires were raging all through the Blue Mountains. And as we're coming down, there's fires everywhere and the radio's going on about fires. And, oh, I hope our house is okay. By the time we got to it, it was ashes. And I remember, you know, being a 12-year-old, my mother was absolutely distraught. And, you know, I was holding her up.
His horse stud in New South Wales is currently threatened by bushfires. He's donating $50,000 to the appeal and encouraging others in the racing industry to contribute as well. He says the scale of this devastation is leading everyone to do what they can.
There's so many good people out there in the world, and this just reminds you, I think, that the majority of people are really good people.
Businessman Jerry Harvey ending that report from Julia Holman. The killing of Iran's most powerful general continues to shake the Middle East. Iraq's parliament has voted to expel the thousands of American troops stationed in the country in the wake of the US drone strike in Baghdad that killed General Qasem Soleimani. And Iran is also abandoning a key part of its nuclear deal with world powers, saying it'll no longer limit the enrichment of uranium. Middle East correspondent Adam Harvey filed this report from Beirut.
Qasem Soleimani was in South Beirut shortly before his death. He's a huge figure in the Hezbollah stronghold, and on a stormy winter's day, about 10,000 people filled an exhibition hall to mourn him and vent their anger.
Trump now, because he is a fool, he's attacking Iran, he's attacking our leaders, and this is never and will not be acceptable.
Some of the Hezbollah supporters expect Iran to retaliate soon.
It's going to be direct, straight to the point, and going to be something that shows the rightful place of Qasem Soleimani and shows the United States of America the wrongness they've done by assassinating him.
Hezbollah's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, is never seen in public because of assassination fears. He addressed the crowd via video link, saying the US is responsible for what's coming. America has started this in this region. We did not attack them. They started a new war of a new type. He suggested Iran's response would be against soldiers, not civilians. A fair punishment is, with all transparency and clarity, the targeting of the US military presence in the region. In Iran, Qasem Soleimani's body came home to the city of Ahvaz, where hundreds of thousands of people gathered to watch his casket pass by. The mourners threw scarves and clothes onto the truck carrying his body, where they'd be caught, pressed against the casket, and then thrown back into the crowd. Since Soleimani's death, there's already been some rocket fire on Baghdad's Green Zone and coalition bases. The threat of more serious attacks is now so great that the US has suspended all anti-ISIS operations in Iraq and Syria. Iraq's acting prime minister says Soleimani was killed after he'd come into the country on a diplomatic mission. I was scheduled to meet Martyr Soleimani at 8:30 in the morning. He was killed because he was set to deliver a response from Iran to a Saudi message. Iraq's parliament has now passed a resolution against US military involvement in the country. The vote may not have much real impact. Sunni and Kurdish politicians abstained, and the action can be ignored by the government. Iran has also announced that it will no longer abide by any restrictions on uranium enrichment imposed by the 2015 nuclear deal. The US pulled out of the deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran, and relations between the two nations have got steadily worse ever since. This is Adam Harvey in Beirut for AM.
And that is AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Kim Landers.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.